This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 27th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is The Role of a Scientologist. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay. The main difficulty in which the auditor is involved is a PC. PCs often decide not to be solvable. 30% of the people that you run into will decide that they are so perfect, so entirely right, so thoroughly endowed with the gifts of the Lord and Allah, that they could not stand any slightest improvement of any kind. Or if they could stand improvement, that it's too good for them. And the situation then evolves that the fringe, the topmost auditable most of this 30%, and the people who are I'll be audited, you know, that aren't quite in the 30%, bring us to an interesting conclusion, and that is that the auditor's chief difficulty is a PC. It's almost inevitably true. But I wonder if you haven't put the postulate about how unauditable they are in before you really tried. If you were to start a session, you would start it by finding a PC and letting him find an auditor. If you did those two things properly, you would discover that the 30% would melt on down to a rather inconsiderable, tiny number. Get the idea? So the session really doesn't start when you find yourself in an auditing room. The session starts when you try to find a PC. When you find a PC, and then let him find an auditor. And when you have done that, you have started the session, really. You've started an intensity, but that's where it begins. PC has got to be able to find an auditor. Now, an auditor in this society at this time is not well known, but this really doesn't make too much difference, since there are various labels which he can employ which are well known. In view of the fact that Scientology is the organization 3 feet back of the society's head, which is where it belongs, it really doesn't and shouldn't be hanging out large banners of advertising and all that sort of thing, you see. But there are many guises and identities which can be assumed. Now, if we take our Scientology and the organization itself, something on the order of a Thetan, you see, we find out the Thetan doesn't have any identity until he assumes one. You see, he is a Thetan. He knows he's a life unit. And then he assumes an identity in order to get into communication. Now, this is the oldest trick on the track. You were sailing around and you decided to pick up a body so that you could have an identification. Somebody came along and christened it and went through a lot of rigmarole, and you have lots of lineages and genealogies and all kinds of things, and you then are in communication, aren't you? Now, what is so adverse to using this trick, since it's the most native trick to the Thetan to get into communication? What's wrong with using this trick as a Scientologist? Let's consider the Hazi, the organization, and with a little rushing up here and there, well, could be the organization 3 feet back of the society's head, see? Not really doing anything to the society and not controlling the society, but simply giving it a hand. Now, would be a bit more brightness than the society itself had, and in view of the fact that the purposes for this do not have anything to do with economic duresses or stresses put upon the social order, in view of the fact that the organization itself isn't diving towards the come, and in view of the fact that all of this can be undone by the subject itself, Scientology being the only subject that can ever undo itself. And if you consider yourself as a part of that organization, or even as an individual 3 feet back of the society's head, as you please, you will find that you have to assume another identity than an auditor in order to get PCs. Now, I'm not here to sell you the cross, and I'm not here to sell you a caduceus, and I'm not here to sell you any kind of symbolization at all, but these are identifications and identities, aren't they? The minister is an understood symbol. You yourself may have antipathies toward a minister or the ministry. You yourself may feel that religion has not done the best it could for society. Well, similarly, you might have antipathies for bodies, and you may feel that bodies have not done the best they could for society. You follow me? Same order, cat. A minister hasn't been any good for a long time where it hasn't been any good, and in places it has been good. Simply because it is relatively uncoordinated, an entire disagreement, one section with another section, to such a degree that their ARC has been shot for an awfully long time. Way back in the first centuries AD, we find the Roman purges. It was very important to you and the organization in the Hazzi. We find Roman purges accounting for a great many Christians. Over 30. More than 30 Christians. Isn't that terrible? Just think that over for a moment. Since the Christians themselves in 1 year in the city of Alexandria counted for dead, killed, 100,000 Christians. Interesting data. I refer you to Edward Gibbon in Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, which book has been permitted to exist in a Christianized society, though I'm not sure why, because the book in its entirety is an effort to unmock the Christian church and religion, and nobody ever suspects it. The sentences are too difficultly written for the people in religion to track the thought. Look at that, 1 year. And do you know why they were fighting in Alexandria? Christians were fighting Christians in Alexandria, and that factional battle all by itself accounted for 100,000 killed Christians. The Roman Empire killed 30 in all of its purges. But the Christian church doesn't talk about this other one, and it would seem to me that that would be the important one. The greatest mortality rate would be the greater illness, wouldn't it? All right. If that is the case, what were the Christians fighting about? Well, as Gibbon says, the Hemosians were fighting the Hemosians. And the difference between these two sects was scarcely discernible except for the I that was in one of the names and was missing in the other one. Hemosians and Hemosians. Very interesting, isn't it? That an organization which started out to be peace on earth would be that organization chiefly responsible for annihilating its own troops. It's interesting. It should be very fascinating to you, because it's a phenomenon of no game. It's a phenomenon of introversion. It's a phenomenon of no reach into the society. Here we get these sects, and they're all in groups, and here they are, one and another of them, chewing up not the society, but each other. You realize that at this time, probably less than a tenth of the Roman world was Christian. And yet we had the tenth that was Christian, self-devouring. Why? They couldn't conceive any game. They were introverting as an organization, not extroverting. Now, the 100,000 that were killed in Alexandria, were nothing compared to the numbers slaughtered throughout the Christian world. And these people, lacking themselves an inner stability, were incapable of reaching further than the other sect of Christians. And so Christianity has failed for 2,000 years. It has never been a success. Why has it never been a success? I mean, organizationally, it's never been a success. Never has been. You know why? Because their motto is peace on earth, goodwill toward men. And during 2,000 years, there has been more war and less peace and less goodwill than I would hate to have to chalk up, but which you can trace very easily, since all you have to do is pick up a modern history book, and it does not talk of peace. Therefore, the Christian movement did not settle the affairs of the world, and therefore was a failure. You see this? That's a hard fact. And Christian organizations, one church or another, would contest this with violent words, I am very sure. The rhetoric which they would throw into the breach to controvert that statement would absolutely overpower and overawe you. But unless they had you on a rack or a cross, I'm afraid it wouldn't convince you. Because we've just been through a war. And I call to your attention that everyone in that war, except for one small section of the war, which has now been magnified into a tremendous thing by party doctrine, Russians. Everyone in that war with whom we were intimately involved were Christians. Thou shalt not kill. Bah. If they're going to put something up like that, let's follow it. Let's don't say, well, let's not kill, except in times when our national honor is at stake. Poobah. Christianity actually died in World War I, and that is why it is not an active force on earth today. I know this sounds like a terribly sweeping, bigoted opinion. It happens to have some truth behind it. Our boys in battle walked across dead enemy troops who had on their belt buckles got mittens. And that was the death of the Christian religion. These boys came home and they had realized these fellows were on our side too in some fashion. What were we doing fighting these men? Christian was fighting Christian. And that was the entirety of World War I, since even the Russian nation at that time was Christian. Christianity is so bad that it permits communism to take place in Russia. I couldn't make a more damning statement. That's pretty bad. Things must have been pretty awful in Russia for anybody to come up and foist off dialectic materialism on people. Do you recognize that dialectic materialism is the philosophy that no idea is new? There is no hope. You're all machines. You're dogs to be kicked around by some holier-than-thou government, which is in itself godless, and that there's no further conscience than the conscience of some murderer sitting in a ruler's throne. Now, that is dialectic materialism, and that is a shame. It's a shame for men to think this way. It's a shame for men to become animals. And where this came in was the place where Christianity had been the most successful. Christianity had bled Russia to the last corpuscle. They were so monk-ridden and priest-ridden at every hand that nobody could turn without dropping a couple of quick rubles into the collection plate. They were so money-hungry and so extremely conscious of the sins of the world that they themselves never had time to be good. I'm sorry if this sounds blunt, and I am not talking mildly and gently about it, but I am just trying to make a statement which is some shadow of the fact. It must have been pretty awful for the Orthodox Church in Russia to have brought about a completely godless nation which absolutely rampages, goes mad right in front of your eyes at the moment that you try to show them the faith or soul or anything of the sort. It just goes mad. I mean, right down here in Hyde Park, George Wichelow once asked of a crowd what they thought of religion. There was a commie there, and he just blew up. And he says, the dope of the people, you know. Maybe it is and maybe it isn't. Who cares about that? Russia today keeps a bunch of Christians as trained apes to show foreign nations when they come in and say, look, we have religious freedom here. Curious, isn't it? Only they don't have religious freedom there. Russia wouldn't stand for on the main anymore. Christian religion should be fascinating. There is something bigoted has gone on here. There is something which has gone on here which evidently was not for the best of the most. Something has gone on for 2,000 years which did not entirely work to the benefit of man. And that something did not work for the benefit of man for the excellent reason that it did not follow its own tenets and ethics. And that's why Christianity has been bad for man. Tried to make a slave out of him. It didn't keep on saying, thou shalt not kill. It didn't keep on saying, peace on earth, goodwill to men. It didn't keep on saying, love thy neighbor, a Buddhist doctrine which had drifted in to the Middle East. It didn't keep on saying any of these things. They went out and made nothing out of any other sect that came up and fought mainly with Christians and not even vaguely with anyone else. All right. If this was the conduct of a philosophy and the most powerful philosophy to date which the Western world has confronted and encountered, if this was the lot of that philosophy and if this was the lot of its organizations, then something was awfully wrong with the way the whole thing was hung together. And I would say there was some error in the basic structure of Christianity so great that we could learn a lesson from it written in words of atomic fission. There must exist in a world a monitoring, civilizing influence. And if no civilizing influence exists in a society, it will sink to barbarism. Perhaps something was trying to fulfill a role which it either didn't understand or didn't believe in. But certainly the civilizing role of Christianity is fouled with the autos de fe. It's fouled with the Crusades. It's fouled with all the wars that have been fought amongst Christian nations. Its record is bad. Somehow or other, it wasn't fulfilling the civilizing function because war is something that makes a beast of man. We know this. Most of us have been there one way or the other. We've seen this. It makes an animal. It makes a human being that perhaps was raised in a gentle atmosphere, who perhaps would have given anything he had to anybody else to help him out. Somebody who was in free concourse with man makes him into such a fellow as I ran into once in a hospital, a chap who was awfully glad the fellow on the bed next to him was dead because now he could get his dinner, which had been served just before the fellow died. So therefore, there's something here. Something here, I'm sure, that we could learn. The first thing I would learn from all this would be the first thing that Christianity did to itself. And I'd learn from that not to do it. Sect butchering sect. We don't care whether the HASI is the banner that goes forward. This, after all, was put up that way because there were a great many squirrel organizations, and any of them could call themselves anything in Dianetics and Scientology they wished, and there was no way to nail down the name. So somebody persuaded me at last, almost at the point of a gun, to put my name on it because it could be safeguarded. You see, nobody would have the right to use my name, but they would have the right to use any of these other names. And so we have cut back a great many pushes which were intended to do only one thing, and that was to unmock the entirety of Dianetics and Scientology. So that's how we wound up with that name, and that's not particularly enjoyable to me or anybody else. But the name could be that or any other name. But remember that we are people capable of certain agreements. We're capable of agreements with one another. We're capable also of disagreements with one another. But we only become capable of disagreements with one another when we have ceased to be capable of agreements. Communication is the solvent of any problem or confusion. It's a terrific thing you should know. The communication is the solvent of any situation or confusion or interpolation. That is the solvent. It isn't sweetness and light. It isn't the amount of banana oil that can be poured on the troubled waters. It isn't the trickiness with which you can resolve the problem. Why, algebraic dihedrals or something. It's communication. And it isn't communication when you've got bayonets because the other terminal ceases to exist. But communication solves any problem. And if you yourself are sufficiently adequate with communication, you should be able to obtain an agreement. You would only be able to fail in obtaining an agreement with communication if you did just one thing, and that was have convictions of such magnitude that they could not be overthrown or forsworn, which could never at any time be monitored to meet a situation. If you won't have communication, then the intention is all haywire. The intention goes bad. You see that? The Christian stock in trade was conviction. I call that to your attention. His stock in trade was conviction. And every time somebody get a little more and a little different conviction, he would go out with communication with all the rest of his fellows. All the rest of the sect. Here'd be a little group, and all of a sudden they'd have a conviction. That means a frozen intention. And this frozen intention then, not being able to vary, would put them completely out of communication with any other part of Christianity. Because all those were frozen convictions. So let's look at the mechanism of the frozen conviction and add up under it all the things we know and dislike about prejudice, all the things we dislike about intolerance, and we will see at once why the Christian world went apart. It was founded on faith, only the way it said faith was conviction. You see that? And where the faith itself became the communication intention, we then, of course, had everybody going out of communication one with another. That it succeeded at all was because of just one thing and one thing only. It had a book. It had a book. It didn't pay too much attention to it. As years went along, it finally collected 7 or 8 versions of it and threw them all together. But nevertheless, they had a common denominator, and that's the only thing which kept them in conviction. There's no comparisons intended here on books. I'm just showing that a statement of goals roughly got them together and kept them in communication one with another. But the statement was not very clear and had not been well agreed upon one way or the other. The Christian world had any one time of turmoil inside of itself and within its own ranks should simply have called people together and talked it all over, and talked it all over until it was gone, you see. Talked it all over until we had a brand new agreement on the situation. You see that? You should have beaten it out. If they had to sit there in Rome or some other place for 2.5 years. If they had to sit there in Rome for 2.5 years, they should have argued it all the way out. They should never have left their conclaves with bitterness and rancor in their hearts. Because they did, they got splinter groups. And these splinter groups were protesting only one thing, and one thing only. They're protesting an inability to communicate. And that's why you've got Methodism and Blankism and Xism. That's why Hamoisianism and Hamusianism came into being in the first place. An inability to talk one with another and reach some sort of an agreement as to what was going forward and why it was going forward. A great many policies were adapted in the Christian church, not necessarily adopted, but adapted to the goals of one branch of it or another, which were not necessarily good policies. And these, one after the other, were crammed down the throats of Christians. I dare say the Christian tenet that we must all be ignorant was not necessarily a good tenet for all of the people in Christianity, and no one was ever consulted in it. And we didn't have a religious movement anymore. We had a fascism. And Christianity existed as a fascism from the earliest years. And it became a big business under Alexander IV. It was a big business, tremendously successful financially, and then got enormous numbers of splinter groups. It has never been a potent force in the world. It has simply been the only force in the Western world which had a textbook on how to be civilized. And apparently, a bunch of boys without many brain cells to knock together got a hold of this textbook and says, let's make a racket out of it. Easy thing to do, and they did it. And I don't think there's been a Christian church all these years. Funny statement, isn't it? But the funny part of it is they have left a shell, an unfilled shell in the society that could be filled. And that's an oddity. Although they've left a lousy reputation, the public thinks they're still around. If you believe they are still around, I invite you to take off a half an hour sometime and try to get a minister to minister to him. Just call up anyone in the phone book and tell them you want to be converted. You've suddenly gotten the faith, and you're standing at the moment in Paddington Station. Now, where the ministry then has erred is in not being the ministry. Total statement. And there are a great many conflicts and a great many arguments and a great deal of upset on the subject of religion because there hasn't been one. A religion is perforce a method of worship and a civilizing influence having to do with the human spirit. And it isn't something to do with how many bank accounts we got. It hasn't got anything to do whatsoever with how many sides of the political pie can we cut. It hasn't anything to do at all about keeping a people in chains. You see how a departure from its definition would bring about a chaos. If religion could have stayed the aloof, dedicated thing in which it was with the details, the various tenets with which it was originally conceived, if it could have stayed that thing, and if it could have stayed amongst its peoples in agreement with one of another, if it had known a little bit more, if it had been a little less power hungry, and so on, you would have had 2,000 years which would have been as smooth as a breeze. You're looking at 2,000 years of history, almost every bad point of which can be laid to the fact that when they first organized the church, they forgot to include God. They forgot to include Christ. It's not for nothing that they keep him at the end of those churches crucified still. It's a joke on themselves they don't even know. Let me ask you this. What is going to occupy that role in the society of maintaining the civilization of man, of preventing his gradual descent into barbarism? What is going to occupy that position? There is no organization on the face of earth today possessed of sufficient information, of sufficient skills, or with sufficient political disentanglements to even vaguely pose as that organization which can attend to man's continued upgrade in civilization. There isn't one. It's a vacuum. It's like a body walking around with no thetan. It's a fabulous thing. Any moment one of the legs are going to fall off. There's nobody going to say, well, let's communicate with the leg and get it back on again. Now, this is an interesting thing. Who and what is going to occupy this position? Well, it's a position of very, very peculiar characteristics. And unless one understood its characteristics, he could never occupy the position. A thetan who has no understanding or comprehension of exactly how to monitor a body and take care of it and get in and out of it and so forth doesn't stay behind it. He snaps into it. Let me call that to your attention. So it tells you definitely that the Christian church did not have enough know-how to keep from snapping into the body. And after it was organized and was all set, it snapped into the body, and although it kept going, its kept goingness was on a messed level. And so we got it building huge edifices. That's a funny thing for a church to do, really, and yet we accept it as one of the primary things the church does. It builds a building. Builds a building. What's it doing with all that mass of stone, huh? So it can interiorize into that, too? Or does it do the trick of interiorizing into the society, and the society doesn't like it very well, so it has to put up those thick ramparts in order to keep the mob out? What's that all about? Well, it's just that they evidently didn't have the know-how. Well, and then the basic tenets of Christianity itself, it tells you they didn't have the know-how. First and foremost, they didn't have the know-how. They kept sending people off to between lives area, recruiting for it. See? Well, this is an odd thing to do for a church to do. Doesn't look to me like we're trying to free anybody or send them to heaven. They kept talking about a specific heaven someplace or another. They made everybody start looking for it, and then the next thing you know, I flip through the gates of Mars, you know. I don't even think they knew it existed. See, they did some odd things, but it was just insufficient know-how. They thought a man could go to hell when a man can go to a body. See, these aren't scientific truths. They're just a bunch of stuff which people came along, and then they took this stuff and they said, now, you'd better believe it, and you'd better have a conviction on it, and if you don't have a conviction on it, we have ways and means of fixing you up, but good. Whether they said that in Latin or Greek or Spanish, they nevertheless said it. You'd better believe. Within the last couple of centuries, British seamen were being burned at the stake in Spain, as well as imprisoned, grabbed off their ships and so forth. Guys much like the fellows that sail away from the ports of Britain now. And they were, all this was done to them. Why? Because they wouldn't sign on the dotted line that Torquemada was the savior of man. I don't know what they wanted them to believe, but if they didn't believe this, they were immediately guilty of a heresy. And in heresy was one thing of which we must not be guilty. And this was doubly difficult because nobody could really define one. You read over these various texts on the subjects of heresy, and you discover that it was awfully hard to find out exactly what a heresy was. But in essence, they intended it to be believing differently than we do, except we don't completely define how we believe. We say we are men of peace, and that is why we kill. So we're not really closely defining how we believe, but nevertheless, you're guilty of an heresy, they would say to bosun's mates Jinx, and therefore we're going to tack you up to that cross and we're going to put a match to you. And he didn't think this was quite the thing to do. So the power of Spain went by the boards under the pounding of the guns of Nelson's fleet. Now, when I say the power of Spain, you probably are not remembering that Europe was a united affair. It was fighting France, according to the history books. It was fighting this and it was fighting that. The funny part of it was fighting the totality of Europe. The totality of Europe. You've forgotten that as far back as 1525, Charles V had a united Europe. He was the Hitler of that day. There was only one holdout, and that was the British soldier and the British seaman. Just one holdout. And they weren't holding out very hard because they hadn't done a complete break with this insanity called Christianity. All right. The world, to a large degree, has been held in a civilized state, and its civilization has been improved by a very few peoples. There have been a few peoples. There have been peoples actually fulfilling their destiny in this direction and filling the role of keeping things pretty well civilized so that you didn't walk down the street and get shot, you know, just because somebody felt like shooting you. And you didn't land in jail just because somebody thought you had dirty fingernails. And the oddity is that England itself has sort of been a country 3 feet in back of the continent's head. You know, Lord knows what Europe would have gone to if it hadn't had that damn dumb bunch of bums that are up there on that island. And we can all get into beautiful agreement that we all should die, and then the next thing you know, they don't like it. In other words, the least religious nation in the Western Hemisphere today, oddly enough, has probably been the one most principally responsible for a continued European civilization. I think we'll agree to that rather easily. Not any balm to the British pride or anything of the sort. It just seems to be kind of that way. No big stiff rising up and saying, well, now he rules the world, meaning by that Europe, has been able to get away with it. It just seems to strike a discordant note in the Britons' character. He just doesn't quite like this idea for some reason or another. See, it's not something he enjoys. So European civilization, one way or the other, has kept rocking along. It hasn't gone completely into the dungeon. It's been through many vicissitudes, but there have been civilizing influences around in the last 2,000 years, but I don't know that very many of them have been Christian. It may have been just the decency of man, and maybe you with Thetan, working what you could and doing what you could, has been able to restrain the descent into the maelstrom. You see, we have a number of factors here which could have restrained this, but there has certainly been no real Christian world because it's been divided and fighting with itself. Its convictions are fixed. It has no real intention. Its goals are not agreed upon, and so very little could be done. Well, it tells us a great deal. It tells us a great deal looking at this picture. It tells us that the Christian was so definitely sold on the idea that he must be a Christian that Christianity itself assumed an identity. It assumed an advertised identity before the public eye. and therefore became a body. Didn't then stay 3 feet back of the society's head, did it? A monk said, "I am a monk." And the fool believed it. So that an organization seeking to assist the civilization of the world today, not to handle and control it, but to bring it up into better communication, bring it up into a better game, keep it from going by the boards and dropping out the bottom, rather has a plan cut out for it. It's a plan that's cut out for it on an agreement on the track. I mean, it's a native basic agreement. And that is that you're just fine as long as you're 3 feet back of the body's head and not particularly known to the body, known to yourself in your own elements, but not particularly known to the body, and perfectly willing to call yourself with the body's name and answer up to it. See, I mean, it's all laid out. There's the pattern. Now, a thetan is evidently, without any compulsion to interiorize, unless he decides to lay a hand in anger upon a body. That's the one thing he evidently mustn't do. Lacking Scientology techniques, he can't get away with it. So one of the things he does is go inside. Too little ARC. The ARC is so slight in such a regard that he is no longer able to push himself out. He says it's force that keeps me away from that body. No, it's not. It's ARC. Rather high echelon, the ability to postulate yourself from one place to another. But there yet is a body and a system extant, a body, you understand, which is extant, which has been built, which breathes and functions all the way across the boards. There's a body. And the thetan comes along and he says, "I'll take its identity. My name's now Joe. How are you, Bill? You get the idea?" Until he lays a hand on that body in anger, he stays outside of it. He can do almost anything with it he wants to until he gets mad at it and starts to cut it to pieces. And there isn't a person who is enforcedly interiorized who has not laid a hand on a body in anger. And that's why he's inside one. He's tried to handle them with force. And in attempting to handle them with force, he didn't handle them at all, because force never handled anything. Things are handled by communication, by a good concept of reality, and by good affinity. That's how things are handled. They're not handled by force. They never will be. Well, supposing we looked around the society and we found some bodies that weren't occupied organizationally. That'd be an interesting thing, wouldn't it? Providing we never forgot we were Scientologists ourselves. Providing we never forgot any one moment what we were and what we were doing. And providing we never laid a hand in anger on the extant body we would occupy. We could occupy any body in the society we wish to occupy. And I'm talking now about organizations. Just as it's true on the first dynamic, so could it be true on the third dynamic. And let's look at, for instance, religion. Since there is a shell, it's a shell. It has certain definite intentions, it says. It has certain names. It has all kinds of things. But it is a body evidently without a thetan. The guy that's supposed to be 3 feet back of one of its organizational heads, for instance, knows or likes bodies so poorly that he keeps getting pneumonia and myopia and all kinds of things. I mean, this is a body at work. See, it's an organization, but it's a body. Now, here we have, then, an actually habitable, usable body in the society which is already known. And although it's been getting a bad name for itself for 2,000 years, it is not
particularly in bad odor. And even if it were in bad odor, it isn't in such bad odor that that odor couldn't be improved considerably, practically up to at least a tar of roses. From monk unwashed 2 years.
Now, there, for instance, is an example of what I mean by letting the society find the auditor. The society will inevitably look around for a mass. What is the auditor? The society asks this question. It acts just, when you speak of a Scientology, it acts just like a body looking around thinking a thetan is batting at it. It can't see the thetan. And it's very confused. And it says, what is a Scientologist? Is he a medical doctor? Is he a psychologist? Is he a psychiatrist? Is he a person who does education? Is he a quack? Is he a bum? Is he a guy who sells books? Just what is he? I don't know what he is. Well, they never are going to know. That's what you guys got to accept. Until you stop banging your head against that particular unknown and give them a satisfactory answer to fit the moment, you always are going to find yourself unknown as an auditor. Quite interesting, isn't it? Very fascinating. The society will just keep looking around and saying, well, what is a Scientologist? What is a Scientologist? Where's that thing? Where is it? Because by the very textual material of Scientology, you start to talk about Scientology, you very often get booted so that, you know, people say, nah, well, it doesn't seem right to me, you know. Argue. Where do they see this? You're asking them to conceive a static. You're saying, well, now here you are, Mr. Lowtone. Why don't you do this process? This is what you're doing. You're talking to him about the basic tenets of Scientology. Why don't you conceive this process? Now, do this process. Conceive a static. Okay, that's good. Now conceive another static. Okay, that's fine. You know, they haven't had any opening procedure. They don't know an auditor's present. They don't know a session's progress. You say, all right, now conceive a static. Oh, that's fine. Now conceive another static. That's swell. Now conceive another static. Of course, the way you're doing this is you're saying, well, it's a funny thing, but you actually are a spirit, and you're doing this and you're doing that, and life runs this way and runs that way according to Scientology, and it's all very interesting. What you're doing, in essence, as far as effect is concerned, is saying conceive a static, conceive a static. And if you look up R240 in the creation of human ability, it says a very heavy process, not to be lightly run, words to that effect, you know. Don't run it on a low-tone case. Duh. Pikely kills him. It's the surest way to murder anybody I know of. If you really wanted to murder the society, if you really wanted to upset it and turbulate and confuse it, you would simply run this process on the society continually. You'd say, look here, conceive a static. That's fine, conceive a static. That's fine, conceive a static. Look, it doesn't have any identity, particularly, except we have put a name to it, but that name is not known, really. But why don't you conceive a static? And a person who is fairly low on the scale actually starts losing mass to such a degree that he gets sick. I could practically kill somebody with this process. I'm not joking now. You practically kill somebody with this process. Well, are you so mad at the society you're going to kill it? Are you in such a towering rage about the society at large in its individual parts and its collective whole and feel so hopeless about it that all you want to do is kill it? Well, if that is the fact, then you just keep on saying to it, conceive a static, conceive a static, conceive a static. Now, there are other things you could say to it, other things you could say to it. You could say, I am an identity. You get the idea? I am an identity. Now, you would only cease to be a Scientologist and become that identity if you yourself did not stay in good communication with yourselves. To drop out entirely, to drop so far that you jump across a gap of communication, means there's again nobody 3 feet back of the body's head. There's no organization 3 feet back of the society's head. Here's an example. A bunch of guys find out they have tremendous success. They all of a sudden have decided they're going to be ministers.
and they have a church, and it looks just like a church, and everything is going along fine. And they suddenly start getting the congregations, the Methodists and Baptists, and the mess starts rolling in. See? And then they say, well, Dickens with the main organization. We don't need that. Look, we're rich. Oh, no, they're not. Every single gold piece that rolls into that coffer makes a pauper out of them. Every single building that goes and fits itself around their skulls traps them. And yet, being men, they will often make this mistake. They'll say, look here, we don't need any other Scientologists. We've got it all corralled. It's all over here in the corner, and we're just in fine shape now, and we're getting cash in, and we're getting this in, and we're getting that in. We got all the preclears nailed down. We got these congregations. Oh, man, see?
They just committed suicide.
Now, to those people, you should show a static. Follow me? That is the most you should do to them. Simply show them a static. Good communication, good reality, and good affinity. Reality depends on an exact recognition of what is going on, and affinity depends on talking pleasantly about it. See? But simply by talking about it, I think they'd come off the pitch. They would learn in a relatively short space of time that every single gold piece that rolls in pins them down more, unless they roll it out again in a hurry. That every building they inhabit is just like getting inside a head. And if they're in it long enough, they'll stick. They will lose their mobility, and society will lose its static. Now, we actually are building a world of broken straws. We are. We have a world today which could do some interesting things. It's all very well for a fellow to read in his newspaper and say, well, it'll all be all right, and it's none of my responsibility. All right? Maybe it isn't any responsibility, but if it's not your responsibility, then please answer me this one question. You don't have to answer this question, but I will state it. What planet are you going to go to set things up on? You don't have to answer that question, but it's one that you better have the answer to if you say you have no responsibility for this ball of mud. You got a planet all picked out, you got a civilization all spotted, and you've got yourself all set up so that you, when this one goes splot, you will be able then to pick up and go on very nicely with that. Or if you're through with this universe, you of course have a universe, I'm sure, all spotted, picked out, mapped and surveyed, that you're going to pop into when this one goes by the boards. Do I make my point? It's a very funny thing, but all of us, particularly us, have a tremendous interest today in the affairs of this dot of mud. And it's the affairs of the East and the affairs of the West. And we look at these characters in the positions of state, and we realize we're not in any positions of state. We have no such identity with which to work. We look at these people, and they're getting ill at the thought of trying to cope with this problem. It's so far beyond them as a problem that it's sickening them. That is a fact, since one of them today is very near death, just trying to cope with this problem. He can't do it. Nobody's going to do it out of a fulsomeness of tremendous identity. Only a Thetan picking up a body, whatever that body is. Picking up a body for an identity and using it, such as an organization, such as I'm not offering you or insisting anything upon religion, I'm just using it as an example. Picking up something and talking with it as an identity. Now, it means you pick up an already inhabited body by calling yourself a minister, by doing this, by doing that, by putting an identity which exists already upon yourself. You will be able to speak into this world, or you could create a brand new identity. You could always create a brand new identity, or take an existing one, and you still could talk. Because the funny part of it is you have in your hands today the exact weapons necessary to resolve the conflicts of man on an international level. You have those weapons. Do you realize that all you would have to do would be to communicate between the two contending countries, which are most antipathetic toward each other today? Just communicate between them, facilitate the communication between them, in order to bring it about a condition of impossibility for them to war with each other? Do you know that you could show to either one those intentions in the other most native to the first? You see, we would show country A that B had many intentions similar to A's, and we would show B that A had many intentions similar to B, and we would keep that communication going. If we did very much of that, we would unmock the intervening boundaries. See, people would just pull off the border guards. You don't have to make them talk the same language, but they must understand the same things, and they must be in communication one with another. You will find man has very, very good intentions. But man's good intentions are blunted with the hearsay via fact that everybody knows he has bad intentions. We know things in Scientology which can solve a lot of the situation. And if you don't have a planet all picked out that you're going to, then I bring to your attention that you personally, as a being, as well as a Scientologist and a member of an organization, have a vested interest in keeping this sphere spinning nicely and neatly on its axis, not in the spin bin or forevermore. Now, where we err is in believing that somebody is going to do something about it. I assure you, if you can't name the person at once who is doing the effective thing about it, then you can assume that nobody has any responsibility for it. And it's just sort of wandering along on a group feeling that, well, it's all cared for. Listen, World War I was all cared for, and then it happened. And World War II was all cared for, and then it happened. All right, as far as the state of the organization is concerned, this organization of Scientologists will be as successful as it communicates one with another, not necessarily into a central office, but as successful as it communicates one with another about its problems and antipathies and demonstrates these into a reality and says what's going on and discusses it and keeps together, you might say, as an understanding. And as long as it doesn't particularly advertise itself in society, or not advertise, either one, as long as it doesn't try to get up in big signposts all the time, but is willing and competent to take any existing identification, identity or mock-up, or make any identity or mock-up necessary to get into communication and stay into communication amongst the society, then the society will never get nervous about the organization. The organization will never get nervous with itself. The thing that you have closest in terms of convictions and beliefs are the fact that certain basic axioms are functional when applied to the mind. And these aren't really convictions because they've never been imparted to you as convictions. You can change your mind about any one of them the moment that you discover it is an error or doesn't apply. So there is no barrier in Scientology to good communication. There are no fixed convictions across the boards, one way or the other. The only thing you're invited to do is just please understand what is going on. Don't make a wild guess at it and a fixed conviction and jump down somebody's throat. I have time after time restrained the organization and parts of the organization from trying to unmock Scientologists. And just yesterday restored the certificates of a fellow who's evidently been quite wronged by another organizational member in Australia. Why? They both got good intentions. I sent them cables and told them to talk. It'll all work out. There is no organizational trouble we can't solve. But there is a world situation that will remain unsolved right down to the last whimper unless we stay together, work together, and do something about it. Thank you.